Okay, hello. My name is VexX. This is the Vex on Vex podcast, but what this is more of is a bumper as a precursor to explain what you're about to hear in episode number 31. During the recording of episode number 30 of the Vex on Vex podcast, myself, Johnny Zero, and Vince Gracie had a pretty cool, spirited discussion about like comic books and things of that nature. And then we turned the mics off. Now, the thing of it is, we had been playing music before this, so we didn't meet for the podcast until, my goodness, maybe 11 or 12 o'clock at night during the week. It wasn't even a weekend. And we started recording, and we did our hour, and it was great. And it was a good episode. I enjoyed it a lot. But then when I turned the mics off and I was doing the editing, the guys, because they're both guitar players, just started talking about music. And I love music. I mean, you know, this is what I do. I'm a musician and a podcaster. But the point is, I was like, fuck it. You know, everybody was kind of drinking, not myself because I don't indulge. But it was like that kind of a night. And we were laid back and it was cool. And I just decided to throw the mics up and attempt to record episode number 31 right on the heels of episode 30. Which I don't normally like to do. I like to give a break of some sort, but I said, fuck it. We were in the cut and we were in the mood and we did it. And we only got about 7 to 8 minutes in before somebody got offended and left. Now, the thing of it is, if I listen back to it, I'm going to play it as soon as I'm done with this bumper for you guys. But I got to tell you, I was a little wrong here and I feel bad. It was late. I had worked that day. We had all done stuff. It was like, you know, well past midnight. And it was like a Tuesday night or something, Wednesday morning. And we were just talking about rock and roll. And Johnny Zero and I, who were very good friends, I love him to death. We do a podcast together called the TV Dads Wrestling Podcast. You might have heard of it. You might have listened to it. Regardless, on there, in character, we like snipe back and forth. And it's bitter and it's fighting. But it's all in jest and it's not real. And I don't know. I just kind of slid into that. And I kind of didn't speak nicely to Mr. Zero about rock and roll, of all things. I'm very passionate about music. So then he just left and he didn't want to record anymore. And he was right. I mean, I don't feel bad for him. I'm sorry. I don't feel bad that he left. I feel bad that I made him feel uncomfortable, if that makes any sense. But I'm going to play that portion for you right now and you're going to hear it. And then it's going to cut off abruptly and we're going to roll in the second portion of episode number 31, which will be an interview with my friend Mike, who's on his way here right now. Awesome guy. You guys will love him. But listen up. And again, I just want to let it roll because it's interesting, and I felt like it could have been a really great episode, but sadly, I kind of fucked it up. Thanks, guys. Stay tuned. Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, my name is VexX, and this is episode number 31 of the Vex on Vex podcast. It is the second part of the discussion with Johnny Zero and Vince Gracie from the band Ascension Drive and Johnny Zero from the band Nation Zero.
And the Vex Files.
Oh, and the Vex Files! Yeah. You're in Vex's solo band.
Did you hear that, folks? That's official.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, you know what happened, John? I did somebody else's podcast as guest like 2 weeks ago. I
guess we can discuss it now.
And I
heard it from the People's Hero. It just happened right here on air.
But it didn't. So I'm on somebody else's podcast 2 weeks ago, and I let the cat out of the bag. And I was like, I'm going to tell you a secret. And they have a lot of fucking listeners, right? And I'm like, I'm starting a solo band. I already have a guitar player. We're going to call it the Vex Files. And then my drummer heard the fucking podcast. He's like, I heard you get a fucking solo band. And I was like, yes.
Well, that's okay, though.
It is okay.
A few different times. Doesn't matter. So,
we were talking about things that matter, which is why we started rolling again. We just had like an episode, but fuck it. We're going to talk some more. You don't know anything about Peter Frampton. The question you had asked randomly off microphone, Vincent, is that we think Brian May is the best guitar player in that era. From that time frame,
arguably up there. Probably.
Oh no, he's a phenomenal player.
Best tone, maybe too.
Yeah.
But now, do you know how he got that tone? Do you guys know?
No. Him and Billy Gibbons.
But that's the thing. But Gibbons is better.
Early Fraley. Yeah.
That's the thing. And Ace Frehley's the '70s. So yeah. It's like you can't just say that Brian May's the guy.
True.
Because actually, to quote Homer Simpson, rock and roll's zenith is the 1970s. Mm. So there are a lot of guitarists. The Allman Brothers are from the 70s.
Yes.
Like, this, I'm sorry?
No, I'm just saying the thing about that we're probably, is the zenith is that the vibrato,
I love that word.
The vibrato of the player,
yeah.
it makes the distinct sound. So everything, you could say Randy Rhoads is greatest. You could say, you know, Peter's the greatest. You know what I mean? Like, it's all about...
Technically, Rhoads is from the 70s, too.
Right.
Shit, really?
Yeah.
Because he's in Quiet Riot.
Yes.
And they
had records released overseas.
Carlos Cavazza. Yep.
Oh, yeah. Year before. So, technically, Rhoads and Eddie Van Halen are both in the 70s. Eddie Van Halen was
tailing. What about Murray and Smith from Maiden?
Definitely 70s.
And Priest, too.
Priest as well.
Priest, so their heyday was more the 80s, but
that's the thing. They're from the 70s. And technically, Black Sabbath is the 70s. Now, no one's saying that Tony Iommi, because of the finger situation, is like a virtuoso, like on par with an Eddie Van Halen. Yeah. But as far as riffs go, this is pretty phenomenal.
Best riff writer ever, dude, probably.
And that's what it's all about, the song.
Neil Schon.
Yeah.
Neil Schon's a great player. Say what you will about Journey, but Neil Schon's
amazing.
But
he's from the
60s. Neil Schon was the 60s.
You didn't know that?
Oh, wait, Santana. Yeah.
Thank you. We discussed
that. He played in Santana.
Tell us about that.
Tell us about what?
That player you were talking about.
Neil Schon. I'm
not.
From Journey, man.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, did he play with other bands?
Yeah, he was.
Motherfucker,
he was...
don't act like he knows. This is my goddamn story. This is the Vex on Vex podcast. I will gladly tell the story, which I already told Vince the first time, which I will tell John Azira the second time.
Do it.
You see, there was a band called Santana. Santana had played this little thing fucking in New York.
They play.
Go ahead, John.
I know I snuck. All I had was the Black Magic one, the Black Magic Woman, because I wouldn't allow the listener records. That's
no one cares.
Wait, that was actually a Fleetwood Mac song.
No, wait a minute. Johnny, come back to the microphone. Come back to the microphone. Black Magic Woman was a Fleetwood Mac song before it was
Santana.
I'm asking.
I don't know.
I don't know either, actually.
I think it is. I think it was one of those songs Santana did was actually a cover.
Now, do you know your history of Fleetwood Mac?
They had a lot of lamp changes. They slept with everyone.
No,
in that
it's
group.
Not that.
They wrote a song about it.
The famous Fleetwood Mac that you would think of with what's her name?
Stevie Nicks.
Is not Fleetwood Mac. That's like the second incarnation.
Really?
There's a whole fucking run. Now, John, you're good at this. What was the gentleman's guitar, the guitar player's name in the original Fleetwood Mac? Was it Petey?
Peter Buckingham?
It's on the tip of my tongue, buddy.
No, Buckingham's the fucking second incarnation.
I don't know.
Peter Green, I believe, is his name.
Green.
There you go.
Now I'm gonna pause this. I'm gonna look it up real quick. Give me a second.
Really,
all right, we're back. Right, Peter Green's the original guitar player for Fleetwood Mac. He's the reason there is a Fleetwood Mac. He's the singer guitar player. Mm. He was a monster.
Holy shit, that's tasty.
Listen to that tone.
Mm.
That's tasty.
He's the guy.
Yeah.
So the only reason the Fleetwood Mac existed is because of Peter Green.
You speak my language.
Wow.
Look how cool looking he is, too. He's a bad motherfucker.
A Strat.
Is it?
That's a Strat.
Yeah, of course it is.
But what kind of amplification?
Probably.
With that tongue.
That doesn't sound like a Marshall.
It's Vox, baby.
Listen
to this.
Look at that stash.
Yes.
Listen to the fucking. Listen to his voice.
Yeah.
He was a kid.
It looks like late 70s Mike Brady.
But this is the 60s, man. That afro is the same thing Clapton had back then when he was in Cream.
Yeah.
Yeah, but do you guys hear this? This is a white guy from
amazing.
England.
Oh my god,
that's why Fleetwood Mac's famous.
Oh god, that's awesome.
So this is like the greatest shit. So when we think of Fleetwood Mac, fuck that. This is Fleetwood Mac.
Wow.
It's like the MC5 of Fleetwood Mac.
I totally agree with that. You're right. That's the greatest sentence ever. Like, this is the real band.
Yeah.
And then this guy freaked out. He left. He quit. He died. Like, he's just... But the voice and the tone out of his fingers.
Yeah.
He was like it.
Dude, this is beautiful. Send this to me.
That's insane. Your love so bad.
Here it comes.
So why don't you give it up?
These are white guys.
Yeah.
What's going to do with
so much soul.
But it sounds like a black band from Chicago.
It does. That's insane.
But Peter Green's the guy.
Yeah.
Where were they? Weren't they from Detroit or something?
England, dude. England. What the fuck, Detroit?
No, did wonder somebody in
England.
Oh, okay.
No, not from Detroit.
It sounds like.
No, it doesn't actually. It sounds like a Chicago blues band, actually. Sir.
Detroit.
Yeah, make it. It's all about Detroit. Get the fuck out of here.
Detroit.
This is England, man. Listen to that.
The British steal a lot of our shit.
And sadly, that is the abrupt ending. So I offended Johnny Zero inadvertently, and I really didn't mean it. And the episode was going really well. It was like smooth, and we were having fun. And yeah, I got a little mean, I guess, because it was late. So I do apologize. And we're going to carry on the rest of episode number 31. My friend Mike will be here momentarily. I guess we'll do the intro thing. I don't know. We already played the song over from the band Starscream at the beginning. And yeah, that was the situation at hand. So thank you for listening, and we are going to continue episode number 32. This could be our longest episode ever, because we're already like almost 11 minutes in, and we haven't really gotten to our guest. Thank you. Stay tuned. Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, my name is VexX, and this is take number 2 of episode number 31 of the Vex on Vex podcast. I am joined today with, I don't know how to represent you to people. I said you were Mike when I was precursoring it to come in, but how do you want to be known on the podcast, sir?
I am Mike.
You're a Mike, that's yes. It? I don't get anything else? Because there's a lot of weird random names you're using online, and okay, Mike is here. How are you today, sir?
I'm doing well.
So when Mike showed up seconds ago, he's wearing a Spider-Man t-shirt. So I make a comment. I'm like, oh, nice, great shirt, you know? And then he goes to start talking. I'm like, no, hold it. Hold it until we're on the mic. So Mike, explain the shirt.
Well, I have a very specific routine that I go through on a weekly basis. It pertains to shirts.
Why is that?
Makes life easier. It's the Einstein principle.
Now, see, no, that's not true, though. The Einstein principle is specifically to wear the same thing every day.
Correct.
Which I kind of did for a little while, so
right,
I'm all about
here.
That.
It's the Einstein principle, but in my concept, I don't have the same shirt. I like variety.
Okay.
So what I do is when I wash my clothes, I line them up hanging up in the closet.
In the order they're going to be worn.
Correct.
Question about that.
Yes.
What if the weather shifts dramatically? Does like psychotic, like you're not wearing a hoodie and it's kind of cool outside. I was just out there.
The hoodie is in the car.
So when you wake up and it's shifted dramatically from 90 degrees down to 40, which it did do recently here in the great state of Pennsylvania.
Like it's all a state trooper.
Okay. Yeah, like it's all, there you go. I didn't get the joke. I get it. So my question is, so if that happens, are you able to change it on the fly, or that's it? I wear this on Tuesday and that's just life.
If it would have been a little bit colder, like maybe another 15 to 20 degrees colder than what it is now,
yes,
I'd be wearing a long sleeve shirt underneath this.
But you'd still be wearing that.
Correct.
And I remember that you wore that shirt when we went to lunch once, and I believe that was a Tuesday.
Yes.
So you're definitely sticking to it, which I respect that. Yeah, I'm definitely all about the rhythm myself. I like a creature of habit, maybe. Someone told me once I'd be very easy to kill because I have a specific routine. I go to the gym the same times every week and
yeah,
all that kind of shit.
I can understand that. Yeah, I switch up my routine as much as I possibly can. Other
okay.
than that and taking care of the dogs,
okay,
pretty much everything's open game.
Okay. So, what are you doing with your life currently, sir?
Kind of job searching, but not job searching.
I thought you kind of found one already.
Yes, I did. But always try to keep my eyes open for something new.
Now, the listeners don't know this, but you were offered a very lucrative career path at the Tesla company.
Correct.
And you chose to not go with that full time. You're still working for them on a peripheral level.
Correct. I am a contractor for them now
okay.
for one of their applications.
Okay.
That is a IT ticketing system
sure.
for their company. So I'm administrating that for them remotely at this time. There's not two other people that work on it that are full-time employees, but anytime there needs to be any changes at the root level of the program itself or anything above that, I come in to do that.
How often are you called on for that? I don't feel like it's going to happen very often.
I'm building a new ticketing system for them right now.
Okay.
So I was given a sign-on bonus to complete that by the beginning of November. I'm just about done.
Oh, wow. That's
yeah.
perfect. Because Halloween's coming, so this
correct.
Is good. Today's, I believe, 10/23, if I'm
correct.
Not mistaken. So you're right on par. You're about a week away, right?
I'm actually about 7 to 8 hours worth of work away.
Dun, 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 dun. Well, turn it in early, man. Impress the new bosses, you know? All right.
Trying.
Have you ever listened to an episode of the Vex on Vex podcast?
When I first saw it on Facebook, I listened to a couple of them.
Okay.
But I'm more interactive. I like to interact with things.
Oh, no,
that I'm
no.
doing.
But you listen. So
yes.
you have an inclination of what you're in for.
Correct.
Which I respect. So when you were at the very tender age of 12 years old,
yes.
thinking way back.
Oh, no.
What were your top 5 favorite musical acts at the tender age of 12?
Queen.
All right, hold on. That's fucking amazing, by the way. So would Queen be number 5? It's 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Oh, okay. Then 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I would actually have to say somebody that would be out of our normal wheelhouse, and I would say George Michael.
Now, It's funny you say that, because I listen to the Faith LP constantly for weeks. It's a good fucking record.
He's an, the people who arranged his music and him were are excellent musicians.
Now, it's weird to say that. You know, he took credit for all that. He said that he did that record. He played every instrument on that record.
Really?
And that's cool, isn't it? Like, when I heard that, conceptually, it, like, blew my mind. I was like a fucking kid, you know? I was little. And, yeah, man. Good record.
At that point, I'd already been a musician for 6 years. I've been playing saxophone.
And he definitely played the sax in Careless Whisper.
Right.
For real. For real.
Yeah.
Which was a Wham song.
The puns, they, you know, played the sax, George Michael. Moving forward. Yes. so that kind of got me started. And then, like, the Bangles.
Now, see, they didn't put a lot of records out, to be honest with you. Now, you know, Prince wrote their first hit.
Really?
Manic Monday?
That explains a lot.
Explain. What do you mean?
Well, let's get to number three first.
Okay.
All right. Number three would probably be my first venture into, like, metal, which would be Foreigner.
How's that a venture into metal? Shame on you.
Kind of. Different than what we were just talking about, the two bands there.
They were pop, though. Foreigner? I know. No, that's not metal.
Well, I said kind of into metal.
And it's weird. They're still banging around. That original guitar player who started the whole thing looks 1,005 years old. Like, he just looks ridiculous up there. Like, you know how the Stones are old but don't look that... All right, let me rephrase that. They look like death,
right?
But it's kind of like... All right, this is fucked up. Bear with me. Going down the rabbit hole. Remember when the Grateful Dead had A Touch of Grey, that video where they were all skeletons? That's what the Stones look like now on tour. But they're still kind of cool skeletons.
Right.
Foreigner guy does not look cool. Like, he looks like your grandfather wearing a fucking guitar.
Kind of like the guy from Raiders of the Lost Ark who, in the white suit?
No, because he's way fatter. Like, way fatter. But he lined up a really, like, young-ish singer, the band's young-ish.
Right.
And then he's like, hello, I'm 1,000 years old, Foreigner, man's good. And the band sounds... stellar. And the singer's been the singer for like 12 years at this point, maybe 15 even.
Okay.
Thin guy, he's fit, he's got to be 50, but still much younger than the fucking 70-year-old fucking guy.
Right.
So Foreigner's not metal, shame on you, but I will put them in your number three position. Now, here's the thing. Why'd I have to go from the Bangles at number four, a great discussion, to go to Foreigner at number three? You wanted me to like leapfrog. Why is that, sir?
I'm trying to think back to when I was that age, and that's what I was listening to.
No, like, I dig it. And
whatever was really on the radio is what I was listening to at that point, and whatever my mom and dad had been listening to.
Now, see, 12 is a different age for me for that. When I was 7, 6, 8, definitely my parents' stuff was still, like, seeping in.
Right.
And I remember 9 or 10, and I think we discussed this over lunch, and I'm so glad this came up so we can discuss it now.
Okay.
I had a little tiny fucking transistor radio thingy.
Yes.
Yes, that had headphones attached to it, which was like radical. You know what I mean?
Wow.
For the 80s, it was radical. But it was this black little box, probably the size of my cell phone now.
Right.
And it had a fader for the left ear and a fader for the right ear, and then a fucking circle knob to adjust the stations.
You had the Radio Shack one.
Yes, yes, I did.
I had a I was thinking about it after our lunch the other day, which one I had. Mine was Realistic.
Same kind of thing, though,
right.
Really.
They were separate companies at that time.
Okay.
They wound up being... they wound up being similar, but not exactly. Mine had the headphone jack, so you could change out your headphones.
Okay.
I actually used to use an adapter like one of those, but the reverse.
Okay. When you say one of those, we're on radio, they have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, like a headphone adapter. A headphone adapter to go from quarter inch to eighth inch.
Exactly.
But
exactly.
I used the quarter inch. That's an eighth inch to quarter inch. I would go from the quarter inch to the eighth inch. So
I had to go to like big stereo.
Right, because I had the big earmuff headphones from back in the day that were like so stiff and so plastic, it felt like wearing Tupperware on your head.
Kind of like what you're wearing now.
Yes, but these are way more comfortable. You know, 30-something years worth of technology has made comfort a thing now.
Man, I got to tell you, so when I put the podcast thing together, like, I guess a year ago now, all this shit's really inexpensive. Like, you just have to go on Amazon, and none of this is a lot of money. Like, the most expensive thing is the Focusrite, which acts as the... Exactly.
Right, and the mics.
No, $20 microphones. Shocking, right?
I'm impressed.
Fucking shocking. And they're great. The clarity's great. Like, we could go stand two rooms away, and it would pick it up. For real, I've had it happen to me, where the kid's playing in the background, and it's on the fucking podcast, and you're like, well, I gotta re-record that. Or, you know? So that's the situation. So back to our fucking thread. I'm telling you a story here, and you've meant, I want to talk about Foreigner, but Foreigner's not the answer.
Yes.
The Bengals' first hit is Manic Monday.
Right.
Remember how beautiful she looked? She's still beautiful, by the way.
Yes.
Hoffs, is that it? Susanna Hoffs?
Yes, I believe so. The Close. Guitarist?
Well, the lead singer, the vocalist. Right. They all played guitar, except for the bass player and the drummer, of course. But I think it's Hoffs. Hoffs. Anyway, the chick who sang for the fucking Bengals, that first hit Manic Monday, Prince wrote for her because he wanted to bang her.
He's like, hey, I'm Prince.
It's Prince.
And it closed a lot of deals there. Prince is the deal closer. So that's their hit. And I remember I was like a little kid. Loved the song. I liked Walk Like an Egyptian, but Manic Monday was the first hit. They wrote Walk Like an Egyptian,
okay.
Which hasn't done the depth or clarity that a Manic Monday was. Because the irony is Manic Monday works 30 years later. Like that song applied, I guess 35 years? No, not quite. Like 33.
About it.
Yeah, that song would still work. Like, oh, Manic Monday.
Yeah, 33 years ago, I was 12 years old.
There you go.
Right.
Dun, dun, dun. So, all right, here's what we have. George Michael, which I agree with, who didn't have a solo record out yet, because his record comes out in 87.
Right. He was still with Wham at that point. Yeah.
I wasn't a Wham fan per se. I remember, oh my God, okay. So we're little kids. This is a long time ago. There was this girl whose grandmother lived a few doors down. She was beautiful. She was a beautiful blonde. She became kind of a C-U-N-T later, but that's okay. She also married a drummer from a band. So anyway.
Oh, there you go. That says a lot.
Anyway, at the time, though, I adored her. I adored that girl. I would follow around like a puppy, like, oh, my God, her. And I guess she knew because she was a really attractive young lady and still an attractive older lady. At any rate, she went to the corner store, which used to have delis before fucking Wawa took over the world, right? At least where we live in Philadelphia.
This is the world.
The world.
You are correct.
So you go to the fucking deli and they would sell Wham buttons. I saw George Michael naked with his thigh over his cock and balls at like 7 or 8 years old. And she had it on her jacket. And I was like, what the fuck? I couldn't even say fuck. I'm like, what on earth is that? That is crazy. And I, there's a naked dude like, hey, I'm naked. And like even then he's like, woo, you know, but we didn't get it because we were 7.
Right.
But yeah, that's the first like time. And then Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go and all that stuff. Wasn't really a fan, but that solo record. Here's what got me with the solo record. He had the hottest Asian girlfriend who wasn't actually his girlfriend in the video. And I was like, I wanna have sex with her. That's amazing. I'm gonna like get like a cross earring and then like feather my hair. Dude, he was the coolest looking motherfucker in the world.
14 years old, I had George Michael hair.
See, I wish I had George Michael hair. I never had it.
I had this big mane of hair when I was 13 to 17.
But no, George Michael hair wasn't a big mane. It was like fucking 80s.
No, but
80s,
I'm saying,
like,
I was able to take it and do whatever I wanted with it. My sisters hated me. Out of everybody in the family, I was the only one born with wavy hair.
Oh, interesting.
Not like curly, but like subtle waves to it. My one sister was born with curly hair that she always wanted straight or just slightly wavy, and the other one was born with dead straight hair.
Dead straight as you bang on the table. Dead straight would be where it's at. Like, I was a Nikki Sixx fan as a kid, and I wanted that kind of hair, and I had fucking Afro Puff hair. So when it looked okay when it was short, but when it grew out, it was like a fucking nightmare, man. Like, Chris Cornell hair.
Okay.
Like, not cool.
That's
like
my one sister.
Yeah. So I had that problem. And then, it was thick, and it was crazy. I mean, it left, obviously. Neither one of us have any fucking hair. But you have a giant beard, of course. But
well, it just shifted. It's grown.
And, you know, Mick Mars made a joke about that. He was like, I hate when I see bald guys with beards because it looks like they just took the top and just flipped it and put it on their face. And I was like, I'm never going to grow a beard because Mick Mars is bad. Of course, Mick Mars is like walking death now. So perhaps I should rethink. I'm not a beard guy. My natural father, who did not raise me, always had a mustache. And then
was it the porn stash?
No, it was like a Fu Manchu, like pretty rock star shit, actually. And he was a bald guy, so it was like hardcore, you know?
Right.
And then I was playing a show at Dobbs a few years ago. My friend Mike came out, our graphic artist, with his then fiance, who turned out to be not a nice lady, but we won't go there. So anyway, they come out. Johnny Zero was there. He's a good friend of mine. And we're playing, and I used to wear, this is fucked up, celebratory fake mustaches after the shows. Right? Just as a joke. Like, woo, mustache. So I would get done playing at Dobbs and put on, and with my bloody fucking makeup and shit, and put on a celebratory mustache and run around the city like, ha ha, I have a mustache. And that day, the random mustache in the pack looked like my dad's mustache. But I didn't think about it, right? So I put it on, and there's all these pictures taken. I see the pictures later. I look exactly like my father with that fucking mustache. And it's like, it is weird because you don't think that you would look like that person, but I look, he's been dead a long time, but I look just like that fucking guy.
Yeah, you look at my parents, it's like, did they actually give birth to you? Did they work together? It's like, I don't even look like my mom. I don't even look like my dad. I think I was adopted.
What about grandparents?
There's
a good chance.
my mom's dad, my grandfather.
So you look like your grandfather.
A little bit.
Yeah.
There's some facial recognition. My grandmother always said that I reminded her of him.
I had a weird thing happen to me. Okay. My parents didn't raise me. I don't know if we ever discussed that or not.
No, I think
but so. It's in the book, so they can fucking read it. And they probably heard it on the podcast before if they listened. So my parents didn't raise me. I was raised by my father's aunt and uncle,
okay,
which made them my great aunt and uncle, right?
Right.
So they're equivalent to like my grandmother's age. Like, think about that for a second. It's like, you know, your dad's aunt.
Right.
That's who raised me. So she's older. I was a little kid. There was a wedding picture in the living room of our house. It was a black and white photo. And I forget which one of the family members it was, but my mother who raised me, who's my great aunt, but I call her my mother. She's one of the bridesmaids in this photo. Mm-hmm. And the person in the center giving away the bride was her father. But I didn't know her father because he was long dead by then. I was like, oh, is that Uncle Pete? And she just looked at me and she's like, what? I'm like, yeah, yeah, that's Uncle Pete. Her brother looks exactly like her father. And she never fucking saw it that way, ever, because she's known them her entire life.
Right.
And then some random kid comes in and is like, hey, there's Uncle Pete on the wall. She's like, that's not Uncle Pete. That's my father. I'm like, ah, look at his face. Ah, that's Uncle Pete. I think you're wrong. I'm just saying. I know I'm five and all, but I think you're wrong there. So, yeah. So that happens. So, for instance, so she sees your face in him. Of course. That makes sense.
Actually, on my dad's side, too, this is why I know that I'm actually related to two of them. You know how genetics jump a generation every now and again? I look like my dad's brother.
Really?
We went to my sister's wedding. My cousin's wedding at years ago. And we're sitting there talking, and it's my uncle and myself. My uncle had just shaved his hair off. He had long hair down past his shoulders, and so did I. I had a back of a ponytail, long Scott Ian-style goatee at the time. My uncle had a full beard that he trimmed down to basically what you see here now, minus the goatee. Him and I were standing there looking, and everybody came up asking me if I was his son, Danny.
I have a question.
Yes.
Do you think he might have fucked your mom on a drunk weekend?
Honestly?
Is it a possibility?
No, it's not a possibility. Okay. He was in Vietnam while I was conceived. So there's no he was in Vietnam from 69 until the end of the war.
Because if you pop, well, you know what end of the, you know what year that is? You said end of the war. You know what year it is?
72.
Technically 75. Because they still have maneuvers over there. And all
well, he was out of there in 72 when the official end of the war was over, when we pulled out of Vietnam for the first time. He was a truck driver over there. So after that was over, he came back and he out-processed.
Yeah, it's not 72. We got to Google it. You know why? Nixon ran in 72, and the whole reason he won by a landslide was because we were still in top of Vietnam.
Oh. So, he came home. He came home late 72.
He didn't
meet me until a year later.
And he was like, "Hey, I don't think I fucked your mom, but you look a lot like me." Just saying there.
Well, it wasn't until we're later, like other than the facial hair and the way our hair looked and color and everything like that, there's very little resemblance between the two of us. But overall, we were both big guys, long hair, beards.
Okay, I dig it. Now, here's the thing: we got George Michael at number 5.
Yes.
We got the Bengals at number 3, and we've got Foreigner for some reason at number 3. Number 4 is the Bengals. Who would be number 2 at the tender age of 12?
Prince.
Now see, that one's fucking amazing. I love me some Prince. Now, do you know a lot about Prince and his backstory?
I know the average amount about him. I know that he's been a singer-songwriter. Well, just a songwriter for other people, as we were talking about, for years.
Prolific.
Years and years.
Well, there's two things I'm going to tell you, if you don't mind, because I love Prince. I love discussing Prince. I probably told this a few times on the podcast, which is probably annoying for someone sitting in their car listening to this. Like, God damn it, Vex. Get to a new story. But it's a good story, I'm going to tell you. Prince was approached at the tender age of 15 to get signed to a major label.
Wow.
You didn't know that, did you?
No.
And he was like, oh, that's fucking great. Let's sign it. By the way, I'm going to produce all my own records, and I'm going to take care of everything. And they're like, you're fucking 15. No. And he's like, well, fuck off. I don't need the money. I live in my mom's house. Bye. And they left, right? And they're like, well, fuck that kid. And then 2 years later, they came back. They're like, okay, you're 17. You can produce now. We just want you on our label. I swear to God, that's real. So they sign him, right? By the time he's 18, the record's put together. He puts a band together. They go out on tour. Now, this is something I know is going to blow your fucking mind. And this is accurate. I don't give a fuck. I'm telling you. Rick James was the biggest African-American musician touring at that time.
Right.
Okay? Late 70s, early 80s. That's his zenith. Before he does that whole fucking Super Freak thing.
Right.
Years before that. He's the guy. The reason he's the guy is he went to a Kiss concert. Gene Simmons is married to a woman. Right?
Right.
You know what I'm talking about? That fucking chick, the Playboy model? You have no idea who she is.
No.
He's married to her. KISS fans are who are going, no, no, and they're yelling her name. I have no idea what her name is. Shannon Tweed.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Rick James was fucking Shannon Tweed while Gene Simmons was fucking her because Gene fucked everything that moved. It wasn't like they were together.
Yes.
Gene was still seeing fucking the Supremes chick, and he's, for real, this is happening. So in there, Rick James lives in, like, hey. Now, he liked her a lot, and they would have maybe wound up together, but he loved cocaine. And Gene Simmons isn't that guy.
No.
And she knew she was going to spend a long time with someone that she wanted somebody, you know what I mean? He even says it. He's like, she fucking loved that guy. She really did. She loved Gene Simmons. But he got to fuck her when Gene Simmons was on tour. He went to see KISS with her. And he's looking at the fireworks and the spectacle. And he's like, I do not like this band. This band is not good. I'm Rick James, bitch. But I'm going to steal all this shit. And he did.
Right.
And when you went to see a Rick James concert in 79-80, it was like a fucking, this was exactly his words, a 4th of July every single show. Like, you went to see him, it's like Black 4th of July.
Yeah.
Like, fucking streamers and sparklers, which is really groundbreaking. African Americans didn't have that kind of production back then. They just didn't. It didn't happen.
Now, I remember the with Rick James and his, the way that he presented himself on stage,
yes,
the videos that you saw, and with Super Freak, that was like their first, his first venture into putting together music videos and stuff like that.
Well, crossover for white people.
Right. That was, like, huge.
Now, an 18-year-old Prince has to go on tour to support this record.
Okay.
The record company puts him as the opening act for the biggest African-American tour of the year, which is Rick James. Prince never played live. He was 15 when he got approached by a record company.
Right.
At 17, you can't perform in a club till you're 18. You dig what I'm saying? He's a prolific musician. Couldn't play live. Now he's in front of 15,000 people every night. So he's watching Rick's set, and the next day starts incorporating Rickisms into what he does. Now,
that's
Rick,
a new word.
Rickisms. Rick doesn't notice this because he's doing fucking cocaine and fucking hookers backstage before he goes on stage.
Right, so he never saw
until
the show.
He gets out there and he does like one of his ha-ha, and then nobody reacts. So Rick goes up to his guy, what the fuck is with these fucking people? God damn it. And he's like, Rick, Prince did that earlier, you know? And they liked it when he did it, you know? But now they feel like you're just following Prince, you know? And you should do your own thing. And he's like, what? I'm Rick James, right? So he loses his fucking mind. He grips up Prince and his band. He's like, look at here, motherfucker. I'm Rick James and shit, right? So Prince has to apologize.
Charlie Murphy shows up out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere. Kicks him in the chest. No, for real. So it's like on one side of the room is Rick James and his band. The other side of the room is like fucking little kid Prince and his band. And the record guy's like, okay, Prince is sorry. He knows that he kind of stole some of your stage moves, blah, blah, blah. Now, he tours with them for like a few months and he learns the Rickisms because Rick could really perform for real.
Yes.
Then he gets in a lawsuit with this record company, post Super Freak. If you do a math timeline in your head right now, when Rick James went away, Prince rose like a phoenix.
Yeah.
Because there was no Rick James.
Right.
He took Rick's stage moves, his vibe, his whole thing. And then for 5 years, Rick is stuck in court. You can't perform live. You're fighting with the record company. You're doing a lot of cocaine. Like, for real. And then at the end of the 5 years, the heat's over. Prince came and took his everything.
Right.
So by 89, when Rick James comes back, no one gives a fuck about Rick James.
Yeah, by then Purple Rain had been out.
For years at that
point.
Now it's Bat Dance in 89. Like, and I remember, this is no fucking bullshit. I'm a little kid in 89. I was still in fucking grade school. A friend's parents. Go ahead.
I was 17.
No, fuck you, man. So a friend's parents are talking about the Bat Dance record and they're like, Prince is a musical genius. So I listened to the Bat Dance record, and I gotta be honest, my little brain was not impressed. Like, it wasn't fucking Let's Go Crazy. It wasn't part of like 1999.
Right.
It was like fucking weird and like functified and not good and not, I don't know. Bat Dance isn't for me the fucking Prince quintessential.
It was different. It was different than what we had been introduced to previously in his prior work.
Yeah.
And that he did venture to somewhere else at that point. And it was him expressing himself musically. And it took a little while to get traction.
No, it sold, but I wasn't a fan. I was a little kid. And then the whole Diamonds and Pearls phase is in like the early 90s.
Yeah.
And then right after that, so this is another Prince story that you don't probably give a fuck about. They give him $50 million because by this point, he's about 10 years into his record company, into his record deal. And they're like, all right, it's expired. You're great. We knew at 15 you were great. We love you. Here's $50 million. You're going to record with us for the rest of your fucking life. And he's like, okay. And he takes $50 million, right? But he's still fucking Prince. The whole time he's making records. The whole time. Not releasing them, but the whole time recording.
Right.
Every day, recording.
Every day. His life was wake up,
go to the studio.
Music,
yeah.
and, you know, have sex with as many people as you possibly can.
Ladies, sir, ladies.
Okay.
Do you think he's gay?
I think he's bisexual.
No, definitely not. Check this out. Michael Jackson asks Prince to be in the Bad video, right? Okay. And then this is exactly the phrase. So Prince goes, let me get this straight. I've read the lyrics. The first line is, your butt is mine. And Michael's like, yeah, that's the line. He's like, listen, let me explain some shit to you. My butt is never yours, ever. You're a man. I'm a man. No. And that was the end of it.
Okay, understood.
Your butt is mine. No, 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 no.
Yeah,
no.
I know.
Prince loved the pussy. Like, dude, he fucked everybody. And he's 4 foot tall, which is amazing.
Right.
So anyway.
Well, them heels and that eyeliner, he could get anybody. So.
Well, I'm trying the eyeliner part. I don't need fucking heels.
Well. If you wear heels, I'm not coming to any of your shows. I'm like, hi, Vex.
Yeah, it'd be like Gene Simmons shit, right? Because Gene Simmons is tall and he has on the fucking platforms.
Well, yeah, he's like 6'1", 6'2", yeah. Something like that. And then he wore like 8-inch heels.
Yeah, I know. So he wanted to look like a monster. And that's cool, I guess. I don't know. Then you have poor little fucking Peter Criss with no heels on. He's already short. He looks 2'9" next to them. He's like, hi, I'm Peter Criss. That's the drummer. So.
You see sticks and a set. A couple hands every now and again.
Are you a Kiss fan at all?
Not really.
Oh, damn. I was going to go off on a little tangent with you.
There was a whole group of people that were into Kiss when I was a little bit older, and then there was me. So there's that.
When you were a little bit older? What, you came back in time?
You're
like, look, when I was 60.
Well, we're speaking of when I was 12.
Okay.
That's why I used the point of reference.
Understood.
But no, when all my friends were getting into Kiss, I was getting into more, I don't want to say more technical music.
But like prog stuff?
No.
What?
Metallica, Iron Maiden, Halloween.
All of which are prog-ish, by the way.
Yes.
For real, not prog music per se. But like those original Metallica records. All right, let's discuss Metallica for a second before I finish my $50 million Prince story that I was about to tell you. But I will come back to that. Let's put a pin in that. Metallica. Every Caucasian musician I think I encountered for about 10 years were into Metallica. Mm-hmm. And I was a kid. When I got my first band together, I think we were 15 or 16. Yeah, I think so. That's about right. And the name of the band was Apathy. They're still together today. I love them. They're in my book. They're called Stellar Belly now.
Okay.
Amazing, amazing musicians. So we get together. We're playing. All of them were into Metallica. And I wasn't into Metallica. I was like a Guns N' Roses guy. I liked the glam music from before. I was really into punk at that time in my life. I was a huge Doors fan. Like, there's an eclectic mix, but Metallica wasn't it for me. And I spent all this time with these guitar players, and they were like, no, man, it's fucking great. So I started listening to, like, Kill 'Em All, which I still listen to today. I like Kill 'Em All still.
Yeah.
And then you get into Is Ride the Lightning second?
Yes. Kill 'Em All, Ride the Lightning, Master of Puppets, and Justice for All. Or between Master of Puppets and Kill 'Em All was Garage Days EP.
But Cliff dies on Master's Tour, though.
Correct.
Okay, that I like Master 80, a lot.
That was 86. October,
exactly.
October of 86.
No, September 27th, 1986, fucking birthday. So that's tragic, right? The only fucking cool thing that happens on my birthday is Cliff Burton dies. And I'm like, oh, sorry, Cliff. Oh, I got another thing.
I know nobody can see my face right now, but the look is probably like, oh my God.
And Avril Lavigne. So me, Avril Lavigne, Cliff Burton dies. And I found out recently Marc Maron has the same birthday, which I like Marc Maron a lot.
Okay.
You don't even know who that is, do you?
No.
Oh, poor Marc. His podcast is so big that he had a sitting president come in. Obama was on his podcast.
Wow.
Which is impressive, right?
Yes.
But you have no idea who he is.
No.
Poor Marc Maron.
We love him, Marc. I will look into that later.
So the thing of it is, Metallica was like the greatest thing for these white guys with... All right, this is mean. I'm going to say it. White guys who lacked swing loved Metallica. Oh, you're going to laugh. But I'm serious.
And I'm going to agree with that.
Which is Kurt Hammett all day.
Right.
And really, I give Mustaine all day, too, because he was a guy. But if you have some swing and some backbeat, which Starscream does, by the way, like, we've always had drummers of different colors. And for real, like, currently, we have a Spanish guy playing. He's the second Spanish guy in a row. There was a black guy for a long time. Like, we've always had swing to the backbeat of what we do.
Yes.
Metallica doesn't even comprehend swing. And I, all right. Now
they're thrash musicians. That's why it's that whole driving angsty music that came out of our teens and early 20s is what drove them to where they are now.
However, can you fuck to a Metallica record successfully?
No,
it just doesn't work. She's not gonna come. You'll come, but she's not gonna come.
Right.
But if you put on any fucking Aerosmith record, there's like a
Journey.
Journey too. Actually, that's a good fucking point. That's a whole thing.
Yeah.
But there's music with a fucking groove to it that Metallica never had. And even at like 14, I knew, not knowing, that groove was important. Because I didn't know, but I knew. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
And so, I like, man, James Brown. Every fucking James Brown record from like 62 to like 78, maybe even 79.
I was in a cover band.
Were you really?
Here in Philly. I played guitar, bass, and saxophone in the band.
For?
They were known as King Friday for a while.
Okay. That's a great fucking band name.
Yes,
I love that band
name. We played everything from bars at Cotman and Frankfurt, Owens Tavern at Cotman and Frankfurt, to the Hilton down at the airport, and Trump Taj Mahal.
What kind of covers, though?
Everything, anything top 40.
Okay.
We did everything from James Brown to Three Doors Down to whatever happened.
Oh, so you're a sellout. I dig it.
No, I'm a musician. There's a difference.
No. There is a difference. Musicians actually make their music.
Right.
Guys who have chops play other people's music for money. I'll give an example.
Okay, I needed money at the time, so...
No, but all right, and I'm not putting you down because you're my friend and I love you. I do, right. Mike, but I'm going to tell you my opinion on some shit. Okay. You're not going to like this.
Uh-oh.
Whores suck dick for money. Uh-oh. They don't want to suck your dick, but they want the money. So if you give them the money, they'll suck your dick, and that's what happens. That's called a prostitute.
Right.
When Starscream plays, believe me, I really want to be there. I'm not sucking your dick for money. I want to play this fucking music. I want to perform. But cover bands are like, oh, well, I do want to pay my car insurance, so I guess I'll go play fucking Madonna now.
You know what? You're not wrong.
There you go.
And that was the mindset the entire time. It was fun. We started out as a band, just five guys that were doing some originals and a few covers. I don't even remember the name of the band. We were so inconsequential at that point.
Okay.
And then this woman started dating my drummer. And she was a vocalist that had a brother and a sister that they were a vocal team together.
Were they
called
the Carpenters? No, I'm just kidding.
No. God, I can't even remember their names right now. I remember the brother, his name was Tim.
Okay.
So, that's simple. I can't remember the two sisters'
names. No worries, brother. No worries.
But she came in and she sat down and started singing with our then lead singer, who actually was friends with the guys from Godbox and Chris Aharka and all them.
I know them very well.
We went into the garage that we were practicing at, and she just started singing some of these some songs, and we were like, and we started thinking, and she goes, you know, if you guys were to do some top 40 stuff, I could sing a lot more. And then her sister came over. Then her brother came over. The rest is history. Then we went from a five-man to a nine-man.
And I would have said, hey, if you could write some fucking songs, maybe we could make some real fucking money.
That was the reason why the band broke up.
Explain.
Because we didn't... That was the original intent. Do this for a little while. Get some cohesion together between all of us. Because we've got nine people, or up to nine people
That
playing.
Sentence that you just said, actually, is the truth. When bands first meet and they didn't write anything together, you gotta jam on something you all know.
Correct.
And I respect that sentence.
Right.
It's when you start taking it out for a public forum. Like, it bothers me. It just bothers me. Like, and I have a dear friend who I adore, who was a bass player for me in 1996 in a band called Idol Defect. His name's John. I love him. He's a phenomenal, phenomenal bass player, still in the cover circuit right now. And that's what he does for a living. But I'll tell you, roofers make more. Just saying. And he's doing good, but I'd rather be a roofer and play music I love. You know what I mean?
I had an idea of maybe taking that to like a house band type thing.
Explain.
I play several different instruments. I play guitar, saxophone, and bass.
Sure.
So I do those all at basically the same level at that point in time. I haven't played saxophone in a long time.
Do you own one right now, Mike?
No, I do not.
Yeah,
I would
you need one for the chops, dude.
Yes.
Because I used to play a little sax, actually.
Okay.
And you know the fucking, the lip thing?
Yes.
Man, you don't do that. You'll lose that shit fast.
Yes, you do. And plus, I have to get other things taken care of before I do that. But we'll get back to that later.
Sure.
Yeah, so I started out playing sax, and that's what led me into that world. In high school, I went to Mass Bomb Votech. We had a talent competition twice a year, the beginning of the year and then the end of the year.
Awesome.
Sophomore year, me and the guys from band and a couple girls from the chorus got together, and we did two songs. The first song that we came out and played was Don't Stop Believing by Journey.
Holy shit.
And then the last song that we played for the competition for the, at the end of the day was, what's that? I'm drawing a blank now.
That's okay. There's no pressure.
Brick House.
What a great song. She's on brick.
Right. Ow. And I played tenor sax on that song for that
one. And the swing in that fucking song.
Yes.
My God. And that's what I love. Like, at the end of the day, I'm trying to mimic James Brown. I'll never be that good. I'm not ridiculous. Right. I know. But any drummer I work with is like, pop, 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 pop. All those snare hits. Got to match my hand gyrations and all that shit. I fucking love that shit, man.
Right. But yeah, we did that the end of the year, sophomore year. What's the name? It's that Shut Your Mouth. You're a bad mother. The theme from Shaft.
Shaft, yeah,
so
yeah.
So I came out, giant 70s fro. That's pretty good. Wig on, bell bottoms, and the whole jacket to go with it. And by that point, I was already starting to grow the taco meat. So it was a large, it was a button down, a pink button down shirt with large lapels and all that, straight okay. out of the costume department at Mass Bomb from the 70s.
Do you know, do you remember when the Beastie Boys put out, Hey Ladies,
yes. Get
Funky, and they all were dressed in the 70s clothes?
Yes.
Melted my brain. I was like, what is, I know, right? It's just fucking amazing. So you get it.
Recently, I just found a band, well, it's a band I've known for a while. They're a death metal band, technical type death metal band
sure.
called Rivers of Nile. They have a song that's all groovy. The okay. whole entire band's done up like they're from the late 70s. The lead singer's wearing a, whatchamacallit, a pink button-down shirt with like a tux jacket on over top.
Pretty cool.
And he's wearing a top hat. But in the middle of the song, instead of having a guitar solo, they have an alto sax solo.
Get the fuck out.
There's a big dude standing in the background throughout the entire video, and it looks like an old, like, early 70s Black Sabbath video.
Sure.
But it's the six members of the band standing there, but the dude with the saxophone is just chilling until the middle of the song, and then he jams out on saxophone and just sits in the back just kind of grooving.
That's what
it's
up.
Really weird because they're really heavy, really technical, and then bam, in the middle, saxophone.
Great musicians are great musicians, man.
Yes.
I love it all. But that's so, to finish the thread and bring it way the fuck back around.
Right.
All these musicians that I would meet in the early 90s adored Metallica.
Right.
And the ones who adored Metallica, it turns out, kind of lacked groove.
Yes.
That's kind of what I saw. And then if they got influence beyond that, like our bass player in that band, his name was Armin, he wasn't a huge Metallica head, but that fucking guy had fucking groove, man. Like he could really, really play, and he always had the fucking feel. So every drummer and bass player combo I've ever pretty much worked with the exception of a couple people, have had great fucking groove.
Just, well, you need that if you're going to throw the groove down. You need the bass and the drums to support
well, rhythm
it.
Section. But like, no, but there were so many. So we were briefly, King Sam, myself, and our old bass player were a part of a band called Moonseed. Kind of like Moonseed 3.0. It was like a retread version. And we toured with it and stuff, and it was like a thing. But the guys who were in the Moonseed version before we were in it, because we shared a drummer.
Right.
They were just the white. That's it. They just had no fucking rhythm. And the drummer had groove, like for real, because he played
right.
with us. And I'd be like, what the fuck is happening in your band, man? Like, this is not it. So I don't know. I'm just all about the groove. I always liked it. I like having sex a lot. I'm a big fan of it, you know? I don't get to have it as much as I used to, but let me tell you, I like it.
We're old. It happens.
No, it's not that. My fucking psychotic lifestyle right now, but we'll get past that.
I'm familiar.
You are familiar.
Yes.
But, yeah, I remember if you put on an Aerosmith record from like 75, like Toys in the Attic, you could
yes.
fuck to that whole record.
Absolutely.
There's a fucking to it.
Every
know what
woman
I'm saying?
I knew liked Aerosmith.
Exactly.
Because right.
there's a fuck to it, or a funk fuck to it. There
and
you go.
Ozzy for some stranger.
I love me some fucking Ozzy, man.
Right.
Oh, I love Ozzy. You know what? I remember being a little kid, and I got a job in a restaurant as a waiter. I'm sorry, as a busboy. And one of the waiters who was older was like, chicks love Dio, man. And by this point, Dio's over. Like, grunge is starting to happen. I was like, what? He's like, you'll see, man. Chicks really love Dio.
Was he right?
No, not at all.
No, I didn't think so.
I don't think I know one. I'm a liar. I know one hot girl who's a Dio fan. You know two?
I know two.
And that's not a lot. Like, mathematically speaking.
Out of all the women I know,
yeah,
no, that's not
two
a
are
lot.
Dio fans. I love Dio, actually. And it's weird because I grew up, I was a Sabbath kid. I love fucking Ozzy Sabbath. That's my
right.
stuff, right? And I would be like, fuck Dio. I wouldn't listen to Heaven and Hell. I wouldn't deal with it. I was like, fuck Dio. He's a fucking dick. And now I'm old, right? Heaven and Hell's amazing.
It is.
It's so good. And like, Dio's so good. And like, I just put it off.
On the same token, I was the same way with, Zach Wilde. when he was no longer with Ozzy and yeah, Ozzy went off 90s, and did his own thing, or Zach went off and did his own thing, I was just like, eh, he's just another Ozzy guitarist. He wasn't all that special. And then about a year ago, I started listening to Zach Wilde solo stuff.
It's really good.
And I actually saw what started it was a video called Zach Sabbath. Where he did.
Oh, you saw it? I love Zach Sabbath. They tour right now. Love them.
And it was a War Pigs video.
But that's not Zach. That's fucking Tony Iommi shit. Like, Zach's records are like Black Label Society.
Right.
The first one's Pride and Glory. God, I love that record. Me and King Sam listened the fuck out of that record.
A Love Unreal is my favorite song.
Okay.
Yeah. That's it's got groove. It's,
that's the thing.
It's heavy. You know, it's probably the perfect song in my eyes.
And Zach said publicly many times that if he didn't get the job with Ozzy, he'd be in a wedding band somewhere. He's like, this guitar is making me money.
Wow.
Yeah. So you have like good company. Personally, I'm like, fuck cover bands. You guys are cunts. You know why I fuck cover bands? It's hard to stay in an original band, to always move forward, to keep writing new material and record your own records with no record company backing.
Right.
That's really hard. Now, we've done that in my band. Like, we've done that for a long fucking time. Anybody could learn 10 covers and then go fucking make $500.
Correct.
I don't like that.
Yeah. But mine was a little bit different because I was playing multiple instruments and so was everybody else in the band.
Okay.
We were always switching up instruments from set from song to song, set to set. So sometimes I'd be doing just saxophone.
Sure.
And that also, we played at Murph Griffin's place down in Atlantic City. What was the name of that?
Oh, he had a couple of them. I have no idea.
Resorts.
Resorts.
We played down there, and there was a whole entire set that was literally just like 50s and 60s and 70s songs.
This is a weird tangent. You might get this. If you don't, it's fine, because I have a fucked up brain pattern.
Okay.
Did you ever see Steve Martin's film, The Man with Two Brains?
No, I have not.
There's a character in the movie called the Elevator Killer, who's just going throughout Europe using like a fucking syringe to kill people in elevators, and then you get on the floor and there's a dead body in the fucking... It's Merv Griffin.
Really?
And they're like... And so Steve Martin catches him, and he's like, you're the elevator killer? And he's like, oh yeah, I gotta do it here in Europe because I'm so famous in America. But I have to kill you now, so no offense. Fucking awesome. And Merv Griffin, you're like, what the fuck, man?
It's like, Merv, come on, man.
Yeah.
It's like, get back to your talk show.
He's like, I love killing. I love it. I love killing.
He was a great actor. A lot of people don't know that about him, that he put on a... excellent, what you call it, acting career before he got into like talk show hosting and stuff.
He owned Wheel of Fortune.
Really?
Yeah. Merv Griffin Productions. Like,
oh yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so that was a lot of money there.
Yeah,
I think he was gay actually. Because I'm not sure. I can't substantiate it, but I think the theory or the story was that he liked boys, and they liked him too. But if you think about it, no, it's not, not like touching people bad gay.
Okay.
Just like, he's like, hey, I'm gay. Like, it's Freddie Mercury. Like, woo, you know?
Eh.
But going back to our list.
All right.
Number two is Prince.
Yes.
Prince took $50 million
yes.
from the record company. He put a couple of records out. And then he put in a record, and they were like, oh, this isn't good. You got to make it more poppy. He's like, hold up. I'm Prince. And they're like, oh, yeah, I know. Times have changed, Prince, you know, and you got to get with it, and it's like grunge and yada yada yada. And he's like, no, I'm Prince.
Right.
And they're like, no, we're Sony. We gave you $50 million. We fucking own you, man. He's like, oh, for real? You think you own me?
No.
And they're like, oh yeah. He's like, oh, fine. And he went home and he changed his name to an unpronounceable symbol.
Right. I remember that.
They go to court. Takes forever. I mean, like 10 years.
It was.
And he wins. The judge is like, well,
you're Prince.
What does the contract say? And they're like, oh, Prince signed it. Like, is that that guy's name? And they're like, no. He's like, fuck you, you lose. And that was it. For real. He kept the $50 million.
That's beautiful.
And then he came back as Prince, and he went back on tour.
I remember that. I actually went and saw him on tour.
2004, right?
Yeah.
My second wife was there. I didn't know her yet.
Wasn't that the Spectrum?
I didn't know her yet. I don't know.
Oh, okay. I think it was the Spectrum.
Very, very good tour, though.
So, number one.
Number one.
Queen.
Now, explain how you found Queen in your life.
I was sitting with my next-door neighbors in my basement watching wrestling on my little 13-inch black and white TV.
Fantastic.
Now, I thought it was WWF, but you informed me it was NWA.
Well, you didn't get to the story yet, but I'm with
right.
you.
But one of the people or tag teams, as it were, came out to We Will Rock You.
Chun chun ka, chun chun ka.
Correct.
That was Manny Hernandez and Ravishing Rick Rude.
Mm-hmm.
I forget the name of the team, but they were the guys who came out to like We Will Rock You, and I saw the same shit.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it affected me the exact same way.
The very next day,
yes,
me and those two people, who will name anonymous because they are pieces of human garbage now.
Oh.
Typical reasons that people are human garbages.
Oh, don't go off. Keep going.
So we're sitting down and they were like, Mike, go get your radio. They're like, you have batteries? And I said, yeah. So I brought it out front. We're sitting on the porch in Juniata and they bring out a tape. They put the tape in and it's Queen. It's that single.
The single.
Correct. Oh, we Will Rock You single.
What was the flip side?
I don't remember, to be honest.
I wonder if it was We Are the Champions, because that kind of is how they played it.
No. It was the one side was We Will Rock You, We Are the Champions, and then the other side was something else.
Very cool.
We sat for the next 3 hours on the porch and listened to that one side over and over again until the batteries died.
So I won it even at the tender age of like 7,
mm-hmm.
in my head, I wanted to orchestrate and pageantry, like all the typical gay American shit, which obviously I'm not a homosexual, but hey, I think I am. So I wanted to, like, I got a wrestling rink. My parents got me a rink. I had little action figures. And then I found out that the NWA toys and AWA toys mm-hmm. were compatible with the He-Man toys. And some He-Man characters could be wrestlers, like Zodak could be a wrestler, He-Man could be a wrestler,
because
they didn't look ridiculous like Skeletor. But you could say Skeletor was like a masked guy. So it worked out.
Right.
So I had my little wrestlers. And
Luchador.
I wanted, yes, Luchador. And I wanted to fucking have theme music. So my best friend at the time, his mom was a huge rock fan, which I didn't know, and she had Queen's Greatest Hits on cassette. I was like, can I borrow your cassette tape, please?
Right.
And she lent it to me. And bro, I wanted to just hear We Will Rock You, but Fat Bottom Girls, Bicycle, fucking all of it. And I was just bowled over. I was like, this is the greatest thing I'd ever heard. And my parents were dorks. They didn't even comprehend Queen. They didn't care.
Right.
Like, The Gambler from Kenny Rogers was, like, prevalent in my house. And, like, Elvira and fucking shit like that. Elvira.
My mom didn't listen to a wide range of stuff. My dad did.
Sure.
So he was into Queen and Iron Maiden.
That's
and
good.
Pink Floyd and all that. But my mom was into, like, Rod Stewart and Chuck Mangione.
Now, the Rod Stewart she's into, is it the Do You Think I'm Sexy Rod Stewart from the 70s? Or is it the fucking early Rod Stewart from the 70s, like The Faces?
Yes, all of it.
Really?
My mom was a Rod Stewart fan from the launch of his career, probably till this day. She even rocked his hairdo back in the 80s.
Aw, like Stay With Me with the fucking Faces is like on my iPod now. But then like that, Do You Think I'm Sexy? Like do. I don't need that fucking disco shit in my life. Dude, the first time I heard Do You Think I'm Sexy, they sang it on Give Me a Break. Remember that fucking that sitcom with Mel Carter?
Uh-huh.
The girl sang it, and I was like, what song is this?
I wasn't attracted to Blair.
Blair was hot. Here. Blair, that's a different show. That's Life. Fuck, what's it called? Yeah. Give Me a Break is a different show. You're talking about Mrs. Garrett is a different show.
Correct.
What the fuck show is that?
I have no idea.
The Facts of Life.
That's it.
I wanted to fuck Blair. Oh my god, I wanted to fuck Blair.
That was the blonde hair chick, right?
Yeah. And
I like Joe.
Joe was like a dyke. I didn't need a dyke in my life. Get out of here. Put some makeup on, goddammit. I'm just kidding. There were a lot of people who started. Molly Ringwald started on that show.
Really?
Yeah, she's like on the first season. This is so ridiculous. Okay.
No,
fuck that. We're going off on a tangent. I have the TV Dads Wrestling Podcast. You've probably never even heard of it, but it's pretty successful.
I've seen it.
It's more successful than the Vex on Vex podcast by like leaps and bounds.
Wow.
Like 5,000 listeners a week. For real. So I got into like researching sitcoms from the 70s and the 80s and shit to like have fodder. I watched a mini documentary on YouTube about the Facts of Life show. It's like insane. No, I did. It was like 15, 20 minutes of my life, and I watched it, and there's Mrs. Garrett. Dude, it all starts on Different Strokes, which I didn't comprehend. So Mrs. Garrett is the maid on the first two seasons of Different Strokes, if you think back. Think about it. She's the maid. And then she had a spinoff.
Yeah.
And they gave her the Facts of Life, but she's the same. Edna fucking Garrett is the same character.
Okay.
So now she goes into the Facts of Life, and she's like heading up a girls' boarding school or some shit, which made no fucking sense, but it did, I guess. And then season one, it didn't do well. It like tanked, but like Different Strokes was such a strong lead in, and they really, like Mrs. Garrett, they gave it like a season two, but they revamped it. So a lot of the girls got fired off of season one into season two. Now Blair became like a big deal, and Joe became a big deal. They were like the kind of lead actresses.
Right.
In season one, it was some brunette girl who I don't even remember. When you see her, you've seen her on the show.
Right.
But she was kind of what the whole thing was like lynched around initially, or built around, I should say. I learned this all in the documentary.
So back,
I was more of a MASH guy back then.
Fuck MASH. Still fuck MASH. All right. The laugh tracks were weird to me. Even then, I'm like, so you're in the jungle and there's a laugh track? Get the fuck out of here. And then, I don't know, it got real left-wing. And the irony is, I'm pretty left, actually. I mean, right. I get older, I understand the right side of things. I'm not ridiculous. I'm a business owner. I understand taxation and all that shit. But as a kid, I'm like, woo, be whatever you want to be, you know what I mean? Actually, I hated hippies, too, ironically enough. And I felt that MASH was hippie, like, culture.
Yes.
And I didn't, I hate hippies. I still fucking hate hippies. Like, oh. Like, I'm mad right now. I'm going to go off on a tangent. Fucking hippies.
You would hate half of the guitarists that I've worked with in my life.
Well, no, it's not bad. All right, here's why hippies make me mad. You fucking, not that you asked, but I'm going to tell you anyway.
Right.
You're an entire generation. An entire generation. Peace, love, free sex. That's their whole mantra. That's everything. Right. 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, right? The same fucking people. The baby boomers. I'm looking at you, baby boomers. And you're all 70, by the way, because you're old as fuck now.
Right.
But you weren't always old as fuck. You used to run the whole thing. Check it out. So the baby boomers were like, fucking hate Nixon. Rah, fuck Nixon. Rah. They finally get Nixon out. They get it. He fucked up. They get Nixon out, right?
Right.
They get Ford in. Ford's not half bad. Ford pardons Nixon. That's a little fucked up. They vote in Jimmy Carter. They are now the majority, right? They're like, yes. Fuck this. Now, I don't know what your opinion of Jimmy Carter is. I'm going to tell you right now. Pretty good fucking guy.
He liked jelly beans. Or no, wait.
He did not. He was a peanut farmer.
That was right.
Oh,
that's right.
Oh my God.
Peanut guy. No.
Don't jump in the story. Don't jump in the story. So they vote in Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter's going to legalize fucking marijuana for real. He's discussing it. It's a thing.
Right.
It's going to happen. He outlaws the flamethrower, which is kind of fucking awesome. Because in Vietnam, you can just burn a motherfucker up. Yeah. It didn't matter. He's like, this is fucked up. We have to outlaw flamethrowers. And now the whole world is outlawing flamethrowers, except for Elon Musk, who just built one. But that's fine.
It's a personal grade one.
It's a roofing torch. Literally, it's a roofing torch.
The distinction between flamethrower and what Elon Musk just created is that he's using a noble gas as the only source.
But the Elon Musk thing,
right?
He said it's a roofing torch.
Correct.
So it's just propane, right?
Correct. It's either propane or whatever type of gas that you can get for a... for like a welding torch, like for doing soldering and stuff like that. It's not acetylene. It's either propane or MAP gas. One or the other. MAP gas is a combination of noble gases that burns cleaner than propane.
Look at you being smarter than everybody I've ever met in my life. I'm not gonna lie. I'm like, what? What, Mike? What?
Okay. So those are the two fuel sources the Boring Company's flamethrower will use.
Okay.
Napalm. Which is what has been outlawed, not the actual flamethrower itself, uses a combination of of pressurized gas and a liquid as well.
Now I have a question.
Yes.
Weren't they dropping napalm in canisters and like bombs on people? That was a thing, right?
Correct.
That was Vietnam.
Yes. We were using napalm to carpet bomb areas.
To clear out
hills and bunkers and stuff like that and underground fortifications.
And just happened to kill a bunch of people in the process.
Well, that was the intent.
The tunnels are kind of a fucking mind fuck. Like, you can't really fight a country that's like underground.
And if you didn't use napalm, the fire would stay above ground, and anybody below ground would have to just hold their breath for a short period of time.
Be fine,
and they would be okay with the napalm. It got down into the tunnels.
Now, I never knew that, for real.
Correct.
That's amazing. You're like, correct, you didn't know that. No.
They wind up getting into the napalm gets into the tunnel, sucks all the gas out. So either you suffocate them, or B, you burn them alive. So it was considered by the UN that it was a questionable means of warfare, and we haven't done it since.
Interesting. Well, I'm telling you, Carter had a lot to do with that, because he's like post, right? So they vote in Carter. In the midst of this, the whole Iran thing goes down. The hostages, really fucked up situation.
Yeah, I remember all that.
Exactly. These fucking hippies voted in Reagan, not once. Not twice, but then they gave George Bush Sr. a run. That's 12 years of tyrannical Republican right-wing rule. Now, when Reagan's running in the 70s, he gets on a talk show. I believe it's fucking The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. Mm-hmm. And he says it should be small government. Republicans want to stay out of your fucking business. He didn't say fucking. Want to stay out of your business and be small government. And that's the way it should be. And I'll be honest with you. I kind of like that conceptually.
Right.
This is the very same guy that when he became president made us a gigantic fucking overblown country. Now, granted, it's the end of the Cold War. It's a whole thing. Mm-hmm. But he didn't stick to his fucking little government thing.
Right.
And I'm not anti-Reagan per se, but Reaganomics sucked.
Yes.
And big government sucked and sucks that we're still in that machine to this day because Correct. He did that.
Yep.
And the fucking hippies voted him in, Mike. The fucking hippies.
Yep.
Oh, free love, dude. Now they're 30. They have a mortgage. They have little fucking snot-nosed kids, and they're like,
I'm gonna vote in my grandpa. I think it'd be really good if he was president three times, you know, because I can't really get my third term. But George Bush Sr.
Now the irony is, I like George Bush Sr. No, good fucking president. If you look back at the timeline, all the shit that Clinton gets credit for the robust economy is off the back of everything that fucking really Bush Sr. put into place.
Right.
Because he got rid of Reaganomics, kinda. You understand what I'm saying? Trickle down on economics.
The war machine brought him to where he is, though.
Explain. Oh, no, I get that.
Right.
I get that.
Like the...
So riding the coattail of the fucking...
Correct. 90-91, the whole escalation in the Gulf with Saddam Hussein and Kuwait, that led to Bush's economy booming because we went from trying to build up the private sector and build up infrastructure to holy crap, we got to go bomb a whole bunch of people.
But the war was like 30 days. Like it wasn't like a real...
No, it wasn't.
What do you mean no, it wasn't? Explain. Please tell me.
The initial war, the air assault and the ground assault only lasted about a month.
Yeah, that's what I said.
I was a chemical specialist in the military, as we've discussed before.
Of course.
I trained at Fort McCall in Alabama. I was a recon specialist with the U.S. Army.
How long did the conflict go on in real life?
It's still going on.
Well, no, I know that. I'm not saying that.
It's just migrated. It's literally, it's just changed forms as the years have gone by.
Now, have boots been on the ground the whole time since 91?
We've had boots on the ground since 1990.
I see. I didn't really comprehend all that because you get the impression in the Clinton years, it was definitely scaled down a bit.
Right.
And then, you know, Bush Jr. gets in. It's really weird. Okay. All right. This is going to get fucked. I don't get like political, but I don't like hippies. We'll end it there.
Right.
Fuck a hippie. Right in his fucking hippie face. Because all the hippies became fucking cocaine fucking disco people in the 70s and became yuppies in the 80s. You're cunts. You have to stick to one thing. I'll give you an example, Mike. When I was 15, I was like, I'm going to be a musician. I'm in my fucking 40s. I'm still a fucking musician. Okay? And I don't like cover bands. I'm not a cover band. But if I started out, I was like, I'm going to be a musician and I'm going to never be in a cover band. And then change my mind 10 years. I'm like, I'm going to be in a cover band and do cocaine. Blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Fuck that. Stay with who the fuck you are. Don't tell me you fucking are free love and a hippie and then vote in Reagan for fucking two terms. I don't get it. You're a dick.
Right.
Fuck hippies.
I'm in agreement. When I was a kid, I wanted to be a go-to guy and a technician. I wanted people to come to me to solve their problems. So here I am solving other people's problems. I can't figure out my own. But
isn't that always the way?
Yeah.
You know what I've noticed in my own life? If my friend Mike has a conflict and you bring it to me, I can see the answer clear as a bell. I really can. And then when a conflict happens to me, like I'm in right now, no fucking idea what to do. Like I feel like an idiot. I'm like, well, if it was... So now what I did recently, I'm like, if this was someone else's problem,
what would I do?
Exactly. And that's kind of where I'm at. So it's just this weird fucking dichotomy. Back to Queen. So you guys listened to that single over and over again.
Correct.
How did you branch out and get into the rest of their catalog?
It was only a matter of hours, actually.
But I'll tell you, that's right around the time the AIDS thing happened for him, where he found out.
Yes.
And they didn't tour the U.S. again. The last time they were here is like 83 for Crazy Little Thing Called Love.
Okay.
Do-do-do-do, right? Yeah. But that shit's gone by like the whole... There was a record that came out in 89 or 90.
Mm-hmm.
He looks like death in the
I
videos.
Remember.
The Show Must Go On and all that shit.
Yep.
Like, it looks really bad. He didn't tour here ever again. How'd you find him? Like, what'd you do? You went and bought records or what happened?
I went to Pat's Music under the L's, where I've been buying all of my reeds and strings and stuff like that.
Now, wait. Which one's Pat's?
It was a little teeny tiny music store under the L between Margaret and Orthodox L Stop and Church Street L Stop.
See, I'm further down. I went to a place called The Record Spot, also under the L.
Yes.
Go ahead.
So I went there. It's like I said, I've been going there for years buying reeds for my saxophone.
Sure.
And they always had cassettes. Actually, when we first went in there, it was A-tracks. And then
A-tracks.
The blend over from A-tracks to cassettes and records all the time.
Sure.
So I had a couple dollars lying around from doing chores and stuff like that, cutting grass. my friends were like, man, we need to hear some more of this. So I hopped on my, I said, I'll be back. I went in the house. I grabbed my little bit of savings I had. It might have been $20.
Sure. Which is a lot of money.
Right. 12 years old, 20 yeah, bucks. Yeah. I was the pimp kid back in the, it's like, you want some candy? You want a pizza? Come on. I'm hungry. Let's get some food. So I took my skateboard, rode up to Patch Music under the L. Came back with a Queen tape, got yelled at by my mom for going to Frankfurt at 12 years old without permission.
Touché.
And went down in the basement and listened to the rest of the Queen's greatest hits.
When I could comprehend that my bicycle could go beyond the little confines of my neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
everything changed forever.
Yes.
Like, I used to ride my bicycle to fucking Needle Park in Kensington. Because wow. right no, because right there was the record spot.
Yes.
So I would go there. Dude, I remember being 12 years old. I had Iron Maiden t-shirts, like shit that just you shouldn't be able to acquire. There's no internet yet. I didn't have a car or anyone taking me, but I would get on my fucking bike, the same bike I delivered papers with. I was a paper boy, literally. So I'm riding my fucking bike and I'm fucking. And I remember just being in a really bad area because Kensington was always shitty.
Right.
Like, the drug thing kind of follows the L. You know what I mean? So that's why it was the stop.
So you're talking about down by Tioga, right?
Way past there. Okay. Somerset.
Okay, yeah, like you're talking about the real Needle Point Park.
Yeah, because that's where it was.
Right.
Was Needle Park. So, but I'm there. I don't get it. I don't do drugs. I'm just here to buy an Iron Maiden t-shirt.
Yeah.
And fucking Queen records and Ozzy records. And it was fucking great, actually. Like, I don't know what it's like to be 12 years old in 2018. I know that you can literally open your cell phone that your parents bought you and go on YouTube and listen to anything in the world that you want. Right. But it was cooler when you had to go out and fucking find
the
it.
The adventure of going and getting
it's
something.
It's true.
Right.
It really is true.
From there, when I went in and started looking, I thought I wanted to get a record. But I was like, I don't want to ride home on my skateboard with a record in my hand. So I bought the tape.
Okay.
From that point forward, on a weekly basis, from the age of 12 all the way up until my mid-20s, every week I bought a new cassette or album or CD.
Totally the same thing. I still do it, actually. Not weekly, but I still go. I buy records all the time, CDs all the fucking time. And then it's weird. Now I'm so not good with technology. I just got a CD. There's what did I get? The most recent Kanye West record, right? I just got it. And I got it in my car and I'm listening to it over and over again. Because I like those records. And I fucking want to put it on my iPod. But now my phone has a smaller capacity for gigabytes than my fucking music collection, which is tremendous.
Right.
And I don't even know how to fucking funnel it in. Like, I'm like, how do I make a new record I get going to my phone? Like,
I need a 1 gigabyte SD card to put my music collection on my phone.
So you understand my pain.
Yes.
All right. We're running out of time, actually. This is almost a full episode. What was your first concert?
No. First metal concert?
No. Your first concert.
Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band at Veterans Stadium with my family.
What year? Or what record? Like Born in the USA record?
Born in the USA tour.
It's probably a great fucking show, actually.
It was. We were in the 600 level.
Yeah.
My dad had gotten tickets for the News Cleaner. He was a paste up artist for News Cleaner publication.
Sure.
Weekly newspaper here in the Northeast. For 30 years. Worked for them from the 60s until the 90s. And we used to get comp tickets all the time.
That's really cool, man.
Yeah. So he took us to the concert. My mom wanted to go see it. She was a big Bruce Springsteen fan. And that was it. I remember dancing on the stairs. My sisters were making fun of me. My mom and dad said, let him dance. It's Bruce.
That guy had backbeat.
Yes,
there
did.
Was fucking rhythm and funk to that.
Clarence Clemons actually met him after the show with my father.
Seriously?
He was one of my saxophone heroes.
Of course.
And him, my aunt, and my uncle, who was the person who got me into music, which we call playing saxophone,
sure.
he was in a band, did the same thing that we were talking about that you don't like. He was a cover band artist. But he was an actual musician. He was in the army band back in the Vietnam era.
Okay.
So like literally
could sight read the whole thing.
Yeah. Like excellent musician. I was like that when I was in practice, but now I'm way out of practice. So yeah.
What was it like meeting Clarence?
Dumbfounded.
But was he really nice, or was he like
yes, he was actually a genuinely nice guy. He did what most people don't do who are celebrities. He came down on one knee and talked to me.
He did that for everybody because he was 8 foot tall. So
well, there's that. Yeah. He was a big dude. But yeah.
Anybody he met, he was like, hold on, little white man. Let me bend down and hold you here.
Right. I still have a signed autograph from him.
That's really cool.
Yeah, so. And the ticket that went for that show for that.
So, Michael, thank you for being a part of our show today.
Thank you.
This has been episode number 31, and we're going to try something new. That's the outro music. I've never done outro music before. This is Bell Bottom Blues by Eric Clapton. It was really Derek and the Dominoes. Listen to this. All this. Here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, the VexX podcast is available on the Podbean application for your phone. This has been episode number 31. You can find us on the Loud and Loaded Network. Thank you for listening, and this is VexX telling you to stay frosty.